You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hello and what is shaking, everybody? Welcome to the Wind Up Podcast. My name is Mike of MTGA Wines. We're back this week, August 13th. The vineyard walks have begun. We're still talking about the state of the industry and all the craziness that we kind of dove in last week after that seminar I was at. I had some more thoughts, you know, after the initial reaction last week and kind of diving into it about labor costs, distributor relationships, like all that stuff, the random quotes I was throwing around. I've been mulling it over for the last 5-7 days and trying to sort out kind of like which way is up in my own head a little bit. We'll dive into that a little bit. What else we got going on? I don't think there's much else. I think those are going to be the two kind of main avenues we go down. We'll kind of see where we go from there. But interesting stuff as we've kind of talked to some colleagues. As we've started going through the vineyard, seeing how this harvest is actually going to be shaping up, because it's going to start here basically at any point. You have some folks bringing in stuff for rosé and white wines, and sparkling in particular has really gotten rolling. But before we get too far into it, as usual, a couple of very quick announcements. Be sure to like, follow, subscribe to the show wherever you're consuming your podcast. If you can leave a little rating or review for it, that is hugely helpful in just the algorithm and getting it out into the world. Please be sure to follow us on our social networks. That's at MTGA Wines. We're most active on YouTube and Instagram. You can also find us on the social network, formerly known as Twitter, as well as the Book of Face. Head to our website, mtgawines.com. You can sign up for our newsletter. On that homepage, you can scroll down to the bottom there where there's a little information box regarding, you know, where you can submit questions directly for the show, anything that we used to do, kind of our, of course, monthly Q&As that we've adapted to more of kind of this longer form, you know, every episode kind of thing. Just, you know, roll right into them and continue diving into all these different topics that folks ask about and, you know, thing experiences that we have. But if you have anything in particular you want to talk about, go ahead and go there. Also, soon to be happening, we are going to be posting up some events this fall. Once we get through harvest, I'm going to be in, Brittany, the HBIC, she's going to be in Texas. I'm going to be in Texas. I believe she's going to be in Florida. I think I'm going to be heading out to, Colorado as well. Maybe Southern California. We're going to be all over the place. So if you are interested in attending at any of our events, she actually just landed in Chicago not like 2 hours ago as I'm recording this. So if you're interested in attending any of our wine events around the country, whether it's with us specifically or with some of the other wineries that we travel with, be sure to head to our website, sign up for our newsletter, follow us on our socials, because we'll announce all that information to kind of direct you to the website where you can buy tickets and all that good stuff. All right. That's enough of the announcements. That's enough of the announcements. Let's go ahead and like dive into this like growing season. Yeah, we haven't really talked like actual like wine stuff. It feels like it's been more businessy lately. And we talked a little bit about bottling a few weeks ago and kind of like the, you know, where we think those 2023s are. But let's look at 2025. It's the growing season. Over the last week, after driving back from Tahoe, we got a little weekend camping trip. I am still ridiculously sunburned. This is what happens when a Swedish-rooted person spends any amount of time in the sun, despite layering on sunscreen 3 times, basically every 45 minutes, hour, like clockwork, every single time, still got cooked. Woe is me, I guess. But as we were on our way back from the lake, we stopped through Clarksburg. We checked on the Grenache that we'll be bringing in for Blair Payton. The HBIC herself will be making that rosé. And again, that chillable red, her Grenache this year. It's sitting at like, probably as I'm talking, about 17 and a half bricks, a little further along than we thought. Those of you that don't know, Brix is basically the percentage of sugar in those grapes. Very typically, for our whites, rosés, things of that nature, we're looking for it to be like right around that like 21, 22 range. And we almost expect it to pick up a brick and a half a week. So we're looking at that like 2.5, 3 week range is when that we're expecting that fruit to go ahead and be ready to rock and roll. So it's just a matter of waiting. We'll check the vineyard again this weekend. We'll probably check it again at the end of the following week, depending on how close we think it is. And this is only going to get busier and busier. If you are following us on Instagram or Twitter, then you probably saw some of the photos of the vineyard visits and stuff we've been doing, just kind of checking in on the kids, making sure things are looking good, tasting good, all that good stuff. Yesterday, or actually at the beginning of this week, on Monday, Tuesday, I don't know, whatever day it was, I went down to Stag's Leap because we're getting some Merlot from the Stag's Leap area of Napa this year. Walked through that vineyard, looked okay. There's a little bit more disease in that vineyard than I expected. Those vines are going to struggle to get things ripe, which is not necessarily a bad thing as long as the weather stays nice. If the harvest season kind of extends itself, the weather stays all right, the grapes will get there. I've tasted wine off the property. It tastes fine. But the vineyard definitely looks like it is in need of some, you know, R&R or something because it is having some issues. We'll see if that actually kind of shapes up. We're going to have a, it won't be a tough discussion with the grower about it. I'm assuming they're aware of the situation. The wine has tasted good coming off the property that I've been able to taste. So we'll see how that actually sorts out. It's a new vineyard for us, a new relationship for us. We'll see what happens. Today, this morning, as I'm recording this, we checked on our Cab Sauv and Cab Franc. Luckily, we're getting those grapes from old family friends, basically. They're, you know, folks that I grew up with. Their aunt actually is someone who Brittany and I rented our home from for a long, long time before moving into this place. Their uncle helped set my broken leg in a high school football game 20 years ago. You know, we go way back with this family. So we know them really well. They've been super easy to work with. And today was just, since those big reds are at least like a month and a half out, we're just like, hey, what's going on? How things looking? You know, there are basically a few things that we walk through these, you know, vineyards and look for. You know, the conversations that we have are, you know, very quick and very easy if you know what you're looking for. I'll give you some examples of that. So like this morning is a great example. Shout out to Jeffrey for meeting me out there this morning at bright and early at 8:30 as he's done dropping off the kids for school and getting his day started. We are just walking up and down the vine rows. They had removed some leaves kind of on the morning side of the vines. So on that eastern side of the vines to help get a little bit more sunlight on that fruit. On the afternoon side, they've left some of those leaves on there to help protect it from the hotter afternoon sun. Great move on their part, stuff that is very routine. They've been adjusting their crop levels. They've been working on kind of seeing what this, you know, how many tons per acre this Cabernet Franc in particular can do. So it's a little bit heavier cropped, but they've gone through and they removed a lot of the extraneous stuff to kind of open up the fruit zone a little bit more, increase airflow, and not have to worry about things not ripening up too late into the season. That section is still finishing up veraison. Those grapes are still turning purple. It's a little bit uneven. I'm assuming, you know, looking at it, you know, because of how heavy it was cropped, I mean, there's a lot of fruit on the ground as I was walking through it. It looks like it's just going to be a little bit behind where it would normally be just because of the sheer volume of fruit that was on there. Like the fruit set was really, really good. There's a lot of grapes out in that section of the vineyard. Great to see. Hopefully they've got buyers for it all. We're only taking a small portion of it. The Cabernet side of things, actually on the other side, it looked like they had thinned that crop out earlier. There's, you know, kind of what you would expect, you know, looking at, you know, a few clusters, you know, per vine, basically, you know, almost you're looking at like that, you know, 2 to 3, even 4, depending on the strength of the vine. In the fruit zone there. So it, like nothing, like all very routine stuff. We talked a lot about powdery mildew, actually, if you want to Google that and what that is. There's a couple different types. One that specifically affects grapevines. They had no issues with it. We've heard some horror stories around the valley of powdery mildew and it just being a little bit too moist and not warm enough and windy enough to kind of keep that humidity factor down. So there's been some issues with powdery mildew this year with some folks. We didn't see any of that in the vineyards as I was walking through them. The Stag's Leap Vineyard, actually, with the, we call it a red blotch. That's the disease that it has. Very easy to identify. It creates some very pretty colors because the leaves turn this like reddish tone, but it means your vines are sick. So looks cool. It helped. It really degrades photosynthesis and how these vines are able to produce fruit. So you're delaying ripeness if you get to the level of ripeness that you even want. Hence why we're looking for kind of this long, nice growing season to continue so that we can make sure that fruit gets to where it needs to go. These are all the things that we're like looking around. You know, we're talking shop, you know, paying attention to how things are pruned, how fruit's getting dropped, cover crops and weeds and things, if those are being taken care of. Looking at like overall vine health, like, hey, is there a disease in this particular vineyard? Might we have some issues getting this ripe? Also looking at sugar levels, tasting things and saying like, all right, like where's kind of the ballpark of where we think these are going to land in terms of harvest so we can start getting an idea of, you know, when we need to have equipment and things like that ready. Overall, this growing season, for the most part, outside of it being, someone was saying, and I've heard this a couple of times, it's either been the coolest season we've had since the late 80s or the early 80s up until maybe like the last little heat wave that we had, which is, you know, interesting. I mean, it actually frankly kind of plays into my hand as a winemaker because I like cool vintages. It's why I love 2023. It's why I love 2011 and 98. These are vintages that I adore and I think have really stood the test of time. And of course, 23 is the new one. We'll see how that goes as time goes on. It's going to need some time. It's an angsty little vintage because of the cool climate involved, I think. But they're in a good spot. The 24s, you know, the 21s, 22s, those are kind of your bigger, sexier vintages, so to speak, right? But if this continues to be kind of that long, drawn-out season, again, the key is, like, once we get into late September, October, the weather's just got to stay nice. If it starts raining early, now we have a 1998 on our hands, and we've got to, like, really start sorting stuff out and figuring, you know, how quick we can get things into the winery. Are things even ready to come into the winery? What's the weather going to be doing for this next forecast, you know, in the long-term forecast? Do we think it's going to be okay? You know, we're looking at it right now and we're supposed to have like another heat wave into the mid to high 90s in about 10 days. We'll see if that actually happens. You know, it's just dotting I's, crossing T's. I'm particularly excited for this vintage. It's very reminiscent of 2023 for me because of like the cool, long, drawn out nature of it. We'll see if we get any big heat waves as we get into September. We'll see if we get any rain as we get into October and so on. But so far, so good. Knock on wood right here on my noggin because it's as good as we could hope for. Realistically, like these are the seasons where I think many of us in this industry, as we're getting ready for harvest, we're very cautiously optimistic. I use this sports analogy all the time, but this is, you know, when the season's looking this good, it's like talking to a pitcher when they're going for a perfect game. You don't, right? You shut the fuck up and you let them cook, right? That's all you do. You don't even look at them. So that's kind of what a lot of us are doing, is we're just, all right, things are good. Let's just keep our mouths shut, because the second we say something, it'll all change. So that's pretty much where we're at. I think I talked about that during our, you know, post bottling run conversation as well. You know, when a bottling run's going really well, you don't say anything. You just keep working, because the second you say something, it blows up, right? And everything goes to hell in a handbasket. So just keep your mouth shut and everything will be just fine. But yeah, long story longer, very excited for where this growing season is going. I think it's going to be a great one, pending any, you know, potential weather issues, changes, things of that nature that may or may not happen in the next 2 months. We are, 3 weeks or so from bringing in our lighter varieties. We're probably a month out before we start bringing in some of our bolder reds. And, you know, I think, again, we'll probably have almost everything at the winery by about mid-October, you know, at the very latest, the way things are shaking out right now. That seems to be the trend. That way, by the end of October, we may actually be able to call it quits. It seems like it's trending that way. I'm still penciling in that first like week or so of November, just because of how cool it's been. You know, we may have a really long and drawn out season. We've actually canceled some trips and adjusted some work that we're going to be doing around the country, just because we think it's very likely that we may still be working in early November. That's kind of this 50-50 coin flip right now And I'd hate to, you know, for me, I'd hate to schedule a bunch of stuff and have to cancel it and reschedule it and all that good stuff. So we're, you know, trying to be really diligent about, you know, how we plan for the rest of this season as best we can, given that Mother Nature's a pill and we do the best given her, you know, annoying nature at times. All right. So I mentioned early that, you know, this state of the industry thing that we went to last week. Let me just type this timestamp in real quick. So there was something that the gal, and God, I should have looked up her name. The gal from Southern Wine and Glaciers had mentioned, and it's something that I've been mulling over for the last 5-6 days because I thought it was interesting what she said. And I didn't disagree with her at the time, but now I feel as though I kind of have this rebuttal. And it's not like I disagree entirely with what she had to say, but I mentioned last week there's this like finger pointing that goes back and forth between suppliers, us wineries, and the distributors who represent our wines. You know, it always feels like there's a slightly adversarial nature to it. I'm very thankful that, you know.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
I mentioned this last week as well, that, you know, I'm very thankful that we don't work with people like that. Like, it's a very much the folk, we're very, very picky about who we choose to work with when it comes to wholesale and distribution, because the margins suck for us. You know, it's borderline a marketing expense. We make a little bit to cover the cost of things, but, you know, it's really just how we kind of get momentum, you know, with our brands, and we like doing it. It is fun to have these relationships and these people around the country that we get to, you know, share our wines with. It can be very advantageous. And, you know, to this gal's point, you know, and she's high, I say gal, I'm like, it's a little disrespectful. Like she's a master somm, like she's a badass, you know, I don't want to be dismissive here. Like she knows her shit. You know, she's created an entire new arm at Southern Glaciers to focus on like small kind of more boutique producers. And she mentioned this, and I didn't think too much of it at the time because it made sense, but she mentioned, you know, direct to consumer, which for those of you that don't know, direct to consumer, D2C, as we say in, you know, the industry lingo here, is, you know, a winery shipping directly to your door. That's any wine club that you're a part of. That's you just ordering online and us shipping it to you and so on. And then you have the wholesale side of things or the distribution side of things where you're going through a big distributor like Southern Glaciers or an RNDC or smaller guys that are more, you know, regional, so to speak. That's us and working with like Bonded Beverage. Big shout out to our friends out there in Missouri. You know, there's a kind of the two things. And I agree with, and she described it as direct to consumer being these golden handcuffs. That was verbatim what she said. The direct to consumer, you know, are golden handcuffs for small producers. And I was like, yeah, that makes sense because you're focused so heavily onto these, you know, bigger margins and, you know, you're cutting out a middleman. It's typically a little, sometimes easier, you know, the profitability goes way up. You know, if you have a great direct following, then yeah, you're probably going to do fairly well as a small business. If you're making 1,000 cases, you know, 12,000 bottles worth of wine as a small producer and doing the majority of it through the wholesale channel and selling through distributors, it's a lot tougher because your margins are just so slim. Now, I talk a lot about this like margin, like volume kind of stuff. We've talked about this a lot in the past. You, the consumer, if you're buying this wine, typically, whether it's from us directly from the winery or you're getting it in a wine shop locally, you're going to be paying like about the same amount, right? There are going to be times, and some of you have pointed this out, you know, with kind of the state of the industry, that there are some great deals. There's a lot of discounting happening. Some retailers, some restaurants even, will discount their wines pretty heavily. We as the wineries have no control over that. We can basically give them a suggested retail price, but we legally cannot force them to charge like our retail price at the winery. That's totally up to them. So if our Merlot is normally, you know, 85 at the winery, but they're charging, you know, 70 in the retail shop, they're just trying to, you know, rely on slimmer margins, most likely, and to sell more volume. You know, that's something that I typically try and have a conversation with them, like, hey, you know, our normal retail price is this. If you're within a couple of bucks, fine. But if it's like a significant percentage off, like, hey, we should probably talk about that. So there can be a little back and forth, but again, we have like no way to actually enforce that other than say, like telling our distributor, like, hey, by the way, you can't sell to them anymore because it's hurting our brand, quote unquote. You know, typically what I tell people, if they see our wine for cheaper out in the wild, I say, go for it, go buy it. If you want to support your local retail shop, please have at it. I encourage you to. The benefit of buying directly from the winery is that, you know, we've taken good care of it. You know how it's been stored. You know, you have a personal guarantee from us that it's going to arrive in good condition, you know, and that retail shop might not carry that wine next year or the year after. They might move on to other things and not buy our wine. And now you can't get that wine at your local shop anymore. So you have to come back to us anyway. So there's like, there can be this give and take is my point, right? Of, you know, what we're doing on the direct side versus the wholesale side. So I wanted to give you like that background. I feel like we've talked about that in the past. I'm sure I have, but just, you know, for all you new listeners out there, you know, let's go ahead and like get that on the level, right? So the golden handcuffs. Now it's, and she elaborated on that by saying, you know, so many small producers started focusing on direct to consumer so much that they basically ignored the wholesale channel because they didn't see it as advantageous at the time. And now that times are tough, you have a lot of these small producers reaching out to wholesalers because the direct to consumer side of thing is dying to a certain extent. Like there's only so many people buying so much wine right now. And her question to the small producers, kind of rhetorically on the panel, was, you know, well, where were you 5 or 10 years ago? Like, why wouldn't you work with us then? You know, why would you focus so heavily on direct and not try and have some sort of wholesale presence? Like, we don't have a relationship with you, and we can't be everything to every brand that wants us to rep their wines. Like, we need to sell the wines that support our business as well. And keep in mind, Southern Glazers is enormous in terms of their size and scope, right? But this trickles on down. This, you know, theory goes on to, you know, small distributors as well. It's like, let's find and make great relationships. And her argument was that, you know, distributors at their core are in the business of building brands, which I disagree with to a certain extent, but we'll get into that in a second. But it's a sentiment that I think, you know, I've heard a lot from other distributors, both large and small. It's like, hey, you know, we want to support these wines and these small producers, but we also have to support our business. And if you guys aren't there for us, then why should we be there for you? Like, why should we do you favors now when you weren't working with us 5 years ago? And I agree with that wholeheartedly. Like, that's fine, right? That's fine. But it came off as a little bit of like the high horse, and maybe I'm reading into it too much. Because my personal experience trying to sell wine through distribution has been the complete opposite of brand building. Typically, up until recently, you know, pre-COVID, folks just wanted to move boxes. You know, very typical. You'd have a few people that were very passionate about your brand, that were interested in you and wanted to support you. But the businesses we were working with pre-COVID and trying to get our wines out and around the country really just cared about their margin and trying to move boxes. Didn't really matter how. Let's just do it. And I'll tell you a story of, you know, kind of how this works. And this is a story that happened regularly to us specifically around the country. This isn't like, this was just the Midwest or this was the East Coast or the West Coast. Like, this happened everywhere that we tried to get a foothold with distribution. And it's not a great one, you know. Let me put this in here real quick. You know, this is how it would happen. We would find a distributor, we would reach out, or it'd be through someone we would know. They'd connect us. We'd say, hey, we want to send you some samples. We're a small growing brand. We want to try and get our wine out into these markets. And still to this day, like we're not trying to be in all 50 states. I want to be in maybe 6 markets. You know, we got a great foothold in Missouri. We're going to open up Florida, going to open up Texas, looking at New York, New Jersey area. You know, if there's one or two more that we can get going, that'd be great. Not necessary, but that'd be great because I want our business to shift a little bit and have more of a wholesale presence. I would really like that to happen. That way there's a little bit more balance, right? So we'd reach out, we'd send samples, and let's say, you know, we hit it off. Let's go ahead and start working together. So they order wine, we ship it out there. I fly out there, I start doing the work work with their sales team, I jump in their cars, we drive around cities, and we present our wines to retail shops, restaurants, so on and so forth. You know, we sell a lot of the wine that we ship out there, they order more to kind of backfill as needed. And very typically, and this happened, I swear to God, 9 times out of 10, you know, we'd see that first initial hit and for like maybe another quarter up to 4 months and then nothing. We do kind of our regular follow-ups, you know, try to do it on a monthly basis just to kind of check in. I typically stretch it out to like quarterly because, you know, I'm just a small fish in a big pond. I don't want to be pesky, but, you know, I like to make sure that our wines are moving, that they're getting into the, you know, sales reps' bags and being presented, things of that nature. So we kind of keep in touch. And eventually it would kind of just go radio silent. And no one said I was being obnoxious. No one was like, hey, man, you got to cool it. Like, we've got other brands we got to focus on. So I didn't get any negative feedback in that way. But all of a sudden, after like 8 months, 9 months, it would just be radio silence. And something that maybe you guys don't know if you're not in the industry is that, you know, typically if a distributor is showing your wine around town, like they've got their wine in their sample bag and they're taking it to restaurants and retail shops, is that more often than not, they will bill you back for that. So I get a bill saying, hey, we open these wines, you need to pay us back for these wines. Fun fact. And what's interesting was, to me, that I wasn't getting those bill backs. So the wines weren't necessarily being shown anywhere. And you know this, if you're just a consumer coming out to Napa and are going to wine tasting, you typically buy what you're tasting. It's rare that you go off list unless it's a producer that you know and trust. You're like, oh, I would love, you know what? We haven't had your Malbec. Let's go ahead and try that. You know, we got to give it a shot. Hey, your Cab Franc's new. You know, we're getting into Cab Franc. Give us, you know, send a bottle of that just so we can try it, right? Like if you, every once in a while when you get to know a producer, you're like, okay, yeah, let's go ahead and give something else a try, right? And eventually radio silence would happen for us. No one else would be trying anything. And there were and this is the response. This is almost the verbatim response that you get from any distributor, you know, pre-COVID and maybe even today. We haven't gotten one of these messages in a while, thank goodness, because we've got some good relationships now. But prior to this, it was like, you know, the wines really aren't moving as fast as we thought. It's been a struggle to keep them going. You know, we're going to have to opt out. We're not going to be ordering any wine and we're going to just have to not, we're going to have to drop you as a brand moving forward. And my response would be like, oh, okay, well, you know, we went out there, we had this great work with, you know, you guys reordered. Have you guys been taking the wines out? That would always be my question. My next question would be like, well, what accounts have you seen? Like, what accounts do we have currently? Have you been maintaining those? You know, what accounts have you presented the wines to recently? And every single time, this happened in Illinois, this happened in Missouri back in the day, this happened in Florida, this happened back east, this happened in Oregon, this happened everywhere we were and trying to be. We didn't get a response. We didn't get a response. You know, we're just ghosted at some point. Now, I'm a realist. I understand that we only make a little bit of wine and our wines are pretty expensive. I get it. We're not necessarily going to be any distributor's cash cow in any market around the world. That's fine. That's not what I'm asking for. All I'm asking is for this level of like mutual respect of like, hey, I'm trying to run a business. Actually, this is happening in Texas right now because we thought we had built last year this amazing relationship in Texas that, you know, and this is in 2024, right? And we were selling a bunch of wine through a couple of locations in particular. And we had built these great relationships. And we've heard nothing from any of them in the last 8 months, 9 months, 10 months. It's been since about last fall, realistically. And we're sitting, Brittany and I are sitting here like, what happened? Did we say something? Did we do something? Are the wines just like not working anymore? Can we get any feedback? And we can't get the time of day. And then shortly thereafter, you know, this last winter, you know, we made some great inroads with a friend of ours and a great, you know, former colleague of mine. We used to work at the same company together who works for HEB. And we started kind of rebuilding, you know, this Texas relationship again, which is awesome. But we had a good thing going. And then all of a sudden, it's like the rug just got swept out. And that's been, historically, that has been my experience with distribution, which is why I fucking can't stand it. So, sorry, Aaron, if you're out there in Missouri listening, you might be getting some news about like this whole, these experiences that I've had. But this is why it frustrates me. Aaron's my main guy out in Missouri. I love him. We work great together. It's been fun to get back in the state of Missouri. So everything's good there. Everything's good there, I promise. it's all these other shitheads that I can't stand. This is why Brittany takes on a lot of the distribution stuff, except for like the relationships that I have, is because it infuriates me to not just get the time of day from people. So, you know, that's my experience. Now, going back to, you know, what this higher up from Southern Glaziers had to say about direct-to-consumer being these golden handcuffs. The reason I disagree with it is because realistically, and based on my personal experience, the world of wholesale is way inferior to golden handcuffs. You know, it's not even remotely close doing the legwork for small brands that we could be doing on our own if we focus on the direct channel. And I think now that I've had a few days to think about this, there's got to be some sort of middle ground, right? You know, and I do think I bring up, you know, our folks out in Missouri because I think that's the middle ground. You know, we find a great region to be in with a good following, and we set expectations. In fact, you know, luckily Aaron and I, we sit and we talk about this when we're riding around the car, when we grab drinks after the workday, and we say, like, realistically, what are the expectations here? And what seems reasonable? And what can we build to? And there's been a lot of like great conversations about how do we build these brands in these states, in these cities, and so on and so forth. And that's what we've been doing now for 2 years. And it feels good. We're selling wine. The events have gone well, minus that tornado in Springfield this spring. Details. You know, things have gone well. There's room for growth and to continue building together. And I think that's kind of my problem, is I look at some of the other markets that we've worked in where we've had these struggles in the past. Number one, you know, regardless of what Southern Glaziers says, you know, the golden handcuffs of the direct-to-consumer world are pretty awesome, right? Because we get to know the consumers who are actually buying our wines. We get to retain a lot of the margin, you know, as small producers, which is how we survive, right? Unless we get to a certain production volume, and that's when wholesale can really work for you. So the golden handcuffs, it's what other option do we have, realistically? And I think that if I were to request one thing from kind of the distribution side of things, whether it's big, small, medium, is, you know, telling more brands no, probably, but doing so ahead of time. Not just take, like, I feel like maybe back in the day we got taken on just because people were trying to absorb as much wine as possible and carve out market share. And now you're seeing like, hey, there's a lot of brands going under. They don't quite have the market share we want. You know, they don't have the, you know, sell through that we want. And we're just going to start saying no to people because we need to work with brands that are going to be around for a while and that are going to work for us. And I think that's where one of our strengths currently lays. That's where our strength is. I'm, man, brain fart there. You know, But it's about sitting down and having a real conversation and business plan. And I'll give you a perfect example, going back to the great state of Missouri. The goal is that I fly out there, I work, you know, for 5 days, a few days in the state of Missouri, all over the state with, you know, our guy, with their sales team. We sell a bunch of wine, you know, give it or take. Like if we sell a pallet of wine, that'd be great across a few events and the different accounts that we pick up. And then if they can sell roughly like another pallet and we build to that point, again, this isn't going to happen overnight. This is going to take time to build this. But if they can do like another pallet and we're selling a little over 100 cases of wine in Missouri just through that channel, that's perfect. Like that's great. You know, that's roughly 10% of our overall production. Like that's great for us and hopefully great for them, where they get to make some good coin on their end and support their business and the accounts that they want to be servicing as well. One second. I swear to God, I heard someone like start a weed eater and the mic was probably going to pick it up. I'm going to shut the door real quick. I'll be right back. Someone's always doing yard work right outside. It always happens. That was the brief pause for station identification. And we're back. So, you know, I think that is something that is very doable. You know, whether it's a big wine producer, small wine producer, big distributor, small producer, whether it is Missouri, Texas, New York, Oregon, Illinois, the Dakotas, wherever. I think there needs to be less of this finger pointing of distributors saying, hey, where were you? Where have you been? Hey, you got to reduce costs. Hey, you got to reduce prices. Hey, you got to do this. And then us going, well, like, hey, you got to get your wine in the, we got to get our wine in the bag, and you need to be presenting it more often, and you need to be supporting us as a brand, and this, that. There's always this finger pointing that goes back and forth. And it feels to me like there are very few folks on either side that are willing to be like, hey, how do we make this currently dysfunctional relationship more functional? You know, one of the, I honestly can't remember if I said this last week as we were talking about the state of the industry, but there was a gal there that asked, or didn't ask, she stated, you know, it seems as though the three-tier system is needed an overhaul. And I interrupted her and said, that is the understatement of the year. And I said that not knowing and not having any idea of how I would fix it. Other than, you know, we probably need like state or federal constitutional amendments to like change how alcohol is regulated in this country, which that part is true. But I think it's simpler than that, in that we need to work on building these relationships and actually brand building, not just taking orders. Because that's, again, been my experience, that we get locked into a market and salespeople wait for people to order our wine rather than presenting them. I'm very lucky that that's not what happens now, and that we work with people that are proactive and want to get our wines in front of people and work with us, both when we're in state and when we're not in that state. That's the dream. And I feel as though that's super uncommon. You know, when I talk to folks that work as brokers and, you know, other wineries, I can't even think of anyone off the top of my head that has that as a regular experience when working with their distributor partners. It doesn't seem like it's a partnership. And that's what I think we need to get to in this industry, within kind of like the core of our industry. This affects you, the consumers, way less. You know, this should be like a direct to trade, you know, public service announcement or something. But this business is truly all about the, you know, about the relationships. And I'm very thankful for the ones that we've built over the last couple of years, even though we continue to have issues with some of them. Looking at you, Texas, even though we're figuring that out this year again. Like, this blame game doesn't work for anybody. And when she said that kind of stuff and was talking about these, you know, direct to consumer, these golden handcuffs, and you guys aren't doing enough for the wholesale world, I'm like, you're not giving us much of an option here. Because when we're not flying out to help you sell wine, you're not selling any fucking wine. You know, we have to fly out there on our dime more often than not to get the work done for you. And that's how a lot of wineries look at it. Oh, I have to go get this done for them. Like, these distributors aren't doing the work. We have to do, we're selling our wine at least half off to them, and we have to go out there and help them sell. And that's where I get super disenchanted with, and I stop seeing the forest through the trees, and I get frustrated. But then you have the success stories with the relationships that we now have. And having it all out on the table, saying like, hey, what realistically, where do we see this brand in these cities and in these markets? What volume do we want to try and work through? What's the product mix? Is it more red? Is it more white? Is it more Merlot? Is it more cab? Whatever. What can we do to support one another, make sure that this is mutually beneficial? And that's the conversation that more wineries need to have, for sure, and more distributors need to have. This is a two-way street, y'all. Sorry, I had to cough, so I muted myself real quick right there. I don't know if this coffee is going to help, but we'll try. That's my solution. Long story longer. Mr. Rogers' neighborhood, we just got to get along. We got to support one another. That's what we need to do. That's what we need to do. I think that's the best case scenario. And I truthfully, it seems like it's moving that way. I think there are still some of the old guard people that have been in these positions, both on the winery and distribution side, that are a little curmudgeon-y, and you know, they kind of see the way it's worked before and they don't really see a way to fix it. They just see the other side of it as kind of the problem and not supportive enough in their endeavors. When the reality is they're not taking that step to meet halfway either. And no one's really willing to accept blame. Based on my personal experience that I've had over the last 16 years of winemaking now, I can tell you that I certainly wasn't prepared to meet people halfway until recently, because I didn't see the point. I mentioned how much the wholesale side of things has annoyed me over the years, because it was just a revolving door of like, oh, sorry, the wines aren't moving. They were good for a month, but now they're not moving. And that sucks. And I've gotten really jaded about it. And I'm trying my best, I think, to, you know, rectify that and build some of these relationships and get our wines out there and create mutually beneficial relationships with folks that want to buy wine. So that's I think where we need to go. The state of the industry thing is it's interesting, you know, when everyone's kind of on hard time, especially this always happens when it's tough. This happened in this same conversation. There's the main buyer for Specs out in Texas that said the same thing, that I swear to God, it was verbatim. I remember sitting this when I was working for Boisse Family Estates. This would have been in 2012 or so. I can't remember the guy. He passed away, I think, quite a few years ago now. But the main buyer for Specs out there had talked about, like, you know, we want to support the brands that have supported us. If you're calling me today because you're up a creek without a paddle, there's not a lot I can do with you, because we already have established relationships and brands we want to support. And there's only so much wine being consumed and purchased right now. So sorry, want to help? Can't. So I do get the mentality that you want to support those that have been there for you. I'm not going to fault anybody for doing that. But when the times are good, and maybe not as rocky as they are right now, we also need to figure out a better way to manage our expectations, to work together on this stuff, and actually build each other up rather than just trying to move boxes. That needs to be the goal. All right. Thank you all so much for tuning in. I needed to get that rant out of the way. Like, I hate that. I really don't like the fact that my experience with the wholesale world is so negative. You know, we've had some big wins recently, which have been great. You know, everywhere from, I've mentioned Missouri a lot. Japan actually has been an amazing relationship. I'm really hoping that we can kind of rectify things in Texas and open up Florida as well coming soon. Get back into New York, New Jersey. Like, there's been a lot of positive momentum in the last 6 months, year in particular, which for me has been very pleasantly surprising, because it's not something I expected, because it's just not how it's worked for me personally in the past. So I'm very thankful for it. And I think that I think there are a lot of people on either side, the supplier side or the distribution side, that are looking at this situation in the world and the alcohol industry right now in general and saying, who do we want to be working with? Right? Now, I mean, there's always going to be your cash cows. Like, if you're repping, you know, your Silver Oaks, Tamuses, Mayomis, like, whatever. There's always probably going to be, like, your big cash cows and your brands that kind of are the elephants in the room, so to speak. But there's a lot of cool niche stuff out there, too. And there's a lot of cool niche distributors out there, too, that just crank. And if you can find some of those like-minded people to work with, man, it's a blessing. It really is. Again, very, very, I feel like I've said it 100 times this episode, but I'm very thankful that that's where we find ourselves more often than not today. You know, I'm bummed it took this long to get there after, you know, 16 years of doing this, but we're getting there. You know, we're certainly getting there. Have an amazing rest of your day, week, evening, whatever the case may be. Again, be sure to like and subscribe the show here. Leave your comments, reviews if you can. Follow us on all of our social networks at MTGA Wines. Again, we're most active on Instagram and YouTube, where you can see these videos as well as regular posts of what's going on in and around the winery. Head to our website, mtgawines.com. mtgawines.com. It helps if I get my own marketing correct. Where you can sign up for our newsletter, check out information on our wine club, the current releases that we have available, all that good stuff. We'll also be posting our upcoming events for the fall in probably like the next month or so. So make sure you're signed up to receive that stuff so we can get it out your way. And hopefully we'll see you out and about. Love you guys. Mean it. This has been the Wind Up Podcast, and we will see you next time. Cheers.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.